Welcome to episode 47 of the Fredcast for the week of December 18th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. On this week's news, an up-and-coming Australian cyclist is killed, an American cyclist gets indicted for lying about doping, Grand Tour organizers raise the stakes in their battle with the UCI, and IKEA gives away 9,000 folding bikes. Following the news, a roundup of wireless iPod remotes, upcoming rides and events, some listener shoutouts, a new product for using your bike in the winter, and PodSafe holiday cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Well, welcome back to the Fredcast, and I hope you enjoyed last week's live episode as much as I did. It was a blast to record that live, to watch all of your messages flashing across the screen in the chat room as we were recording, and also to have the opportunity of having some live call-in listeners. Now, next time we do it, and we will do it again, I hope that more of you will decide to jump on the phone, as Rick did, and ask your questions, because the interactive nature of live radio is really what makes it so much fun. So loved having you in the chat room. That was fantastic. But next time, hope more of you will call in. And I hope that you did enjoy the show. And if you weren't able to listen live, I hope that the electricity of the show came across in the recorded podcast. Well, let's get right into the news. I've got a lot of news. And unfortunately, our first news story is definitely a real downer. According to the news, a promising young Australian cyclist was killed on Friday. 19-year-old Scott Peoples from Shepparton died after he was hit from behind by a four-wheel drive during a training ride on the Maroondah Highway in Merton, Victoria, Australia. Now, Peoples was a double stage winner in last month's Tour of the Southland in New Zealand, and he finished third overall in the 2006 Tour of Tasmania. So he was an up-and-coming young Australian cyclist, and he definitely had aspirations of getting on the UCI Pro Tour circuit and going to the Grand Tours. In a statement released by Cycling Australia, their chief executive, Graham Fredericks, said, quote, "Our thoughts are with his family and friends as they try to deal with their terrible loss. Scott was a young rider with a great future ahead of him, but that future has been cruelly cut short." Then he went on to say something that I think is very important for everyone all across the world to remember at this time of year. "This tragedy once again highlights the need for motorists to take special care and be aware of cyclists on our road. Many Australians, both young and old, will be receiving bicycles for Christmas and will be on the roads trying them out. So I urge all motorists to be patient, because an extra 5 minutes added to your journey is a small price to pay to keep a cyclist safe." I think that's a very good message, and obviously this is an awful, horrific story. The fact that somebody who, number one, was just a young person whose life was cut short, but also someone with so much promise in our sport whose life was taken from them so much too soon. But if there's anything that good that can come of this story, it would be if motorists would get the message that we're vulnerable when we're out there on our bikes, whether we're in our 40s, 50s, 60s, whether we're in our teens or in our early 20s, whether we're promising cyclists or just young kids or families out for a leisurely ride. It's dangerous for us out there. And if motorists would learn that lesson, I think we'd all be better off. So like I said, if that's the one good thing that can come out of this story, I think we'd all be happy. Our next story concerns something that when I first imagined the Fredcast, it was something that I never thought I'd be talking about all the time. And you know what that is. It's doping. I never thought that it would was going to be something that was going to dominate the show the way that it has. But unfortunately, it really is the topic of the year when it comes to cycling. And this one is quite an interesting story. This is the story of Tammy Thomas. Now, Tammy Thomas was the silver medalist in the sprint competition at the 2001 World Championships, but she was banned for life from cycling in August 2002 after testing positive for an anabolic agent called norbothone. But that's not the reason why Tammy's in the news this week. No, Tammy's in the news because she was asked to testify in front of a grand jury here in the United States that's investigating a company called the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative, or BALCO, which was a sports nutrition center in Burlingame, California, that has been linked to accusations that it provided steroids and other doping agents to professional athletes. Some of those athletes, very high-profile American athletes, including quite possibly, or so it's alleged, Barry Bonds, somebody that I've talked to you about here on the show, and I know that I've also talked about on the Spokesman podcast. She was indicted because she is accused of having lied to the grand jury when she said she never used performance-enhancing drugs. Now, according to U.S. Attorney Kevin Ryan, in a statement released this week, quote, "Perjury undermines the fundamental mission of our investigative and judicial processes to uncover the truth. Lying under oath to a grand jury must be vigorously prosecuted, or else this essential truth-finding mission is significantly undermined." So far, in all the reports that I've read, neither Thomas nor her family have issued any statements. However, there is quite a bit of buzz about the fact that since she's now been indicted for having lied to the grand jury about her alleged use of doping agents, whether or not there's a possibility that Barry Bonds might also be subject to a possible indictment because he also told the grand jury that he'd never knowingly used steroids. Now, if you're not in the United States or perhaps you're not a baseball fan, which parenthetically I'm not, Barry Bonds holds the second place on the all-time Major League Baseball home run list. And there's been quite a controversy here in the United States about the fact that if indeed Barry Bonds did use steroids, whether or not he rightfully should be on the list for having hit so many home runs, because quite possibly one of the reasons that he may have done that, allegedly, would be because he may have been juiced. So, very interesting, because I've talked about Barry Bonds before, because I've talked about how I find it so interesting that cyclists end up being in the spotlight and end up being ostracized for their doping, but that other professional athletes who are alleged to have been using doping agents continue to play and continue to participate in their sports and continue to enjoy the popularity of the fans and of the public. And I've also wondered what exactly that means about where our society is today. So Thomas is indicted. We'll see whether or not Barry Bonds and some of these other athletes might also be in a little bit of hot water as a result of this whole scandal with BALCO. And while we're on the subject of doping, I think that we should talk about stories that came out this week that had to do with some of the more famous riders that were alleged to have been involved in doping scandals this year. And the first concerns Floyd Landis, the winner of the 2006 Tour de France, but against whom there are currently doping charges and the possibility that he might be stripped of the title of having been the winner of the Tour de France. Floyd gave an interview to the Belgian press this week in which he said, quote, "There's a minute chance of me racing again in 2007. Even if I'm not suspended, who will want to sign me?" He then said, "And if they suspend me for 2 or 4 years, a humiliation which I hope doesn't happen, it's over for me. As things stand now, I don't see myself as a bike racer." So this is really sad news indeed, because if indeed Floyd did not do what it's alleged that he did, in other words, if he didn't boost the testosterone in his blood in order to win that critical stage in the Tour de France, then this is simply a system that has failed all of us, cyclists, professional cyclists, recreational cyclists, and cycling fans. Obviously, none of us know at this point what exactly did happen, and the case is still to be adjudicated. He still has an appeal pending, and no final decisions have been made about his fate. But like I said, if we just take him at his word and assume for a moment, and I know a lot of you don't believe this, but if you just assume for a moment that he didn't do it, or that the French lab that was involved here did make the blunders that are alleged by Floyd and his attorneys, then there's no doubt that this is a system that's failed, because it's taken somebody who is perhaps one of the best bicycle racers, certainly of our time, and put him to the point where he's now saying he no longer considers himself a bicycle racer, and where he's quite, as far as I read it, he's quite possibly saying that even if he's cleared, he may never race again. And that in and of itself is a sad state of affairs. On the other hand, if he did dope, it's still a sad state of affairs, because here is a cyclist that failed the system and failed all of us as fans. So no matter how you cut it, this Floyd Landis affair just continues to reverberate in the cycling world, and it is a sad state indeed. And speaking of that French lab, you'll recall that a few weeks ago I told you that the lab's computers had been hacked, and you remember that there was some accusation that it was somebody on Landis's defense team that was somehow involved, and of course nobody believed that to begin with, and now of course they're backing away from that. But more importantly, the lab now has gotten the agreement of the French anti-doping agency that they could have their computer security increased. As a matter of fact, Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin's Defense Advisory Council agreed that security must be improved at the lab to make the computer systems more secure. According to the French anti-doping agency president, Pierre Bourdry, quote, "We have reached an agreement to bring it up to standard. I'm surprised measures were not taken any earlier." Quite frankly, considering what this lab does, I'm surprised too. But getting back to our discussion of cyclists who were disgraced this year in cycling scandals, you'll recall that Jan Ulrich was at the top of everyone's list of contenders to win the 2006 Tour de France. But just one day prior to the start of the race, he and a lot of others were disallowed from participation because of allegations that they were involved in the Operación Puerto doping scandal in Spain. Ulrich, according to news reports this week, said that he had, quote, "imagined winning the Tour de France this year and announcing his retirement the night of the arrival in Paris." According to Ulrich, quote, "events upset my plans." He went on to say that he still wants to race in one of the Grand Tours and win one of the Grand Tours, but he has to be able to find a team that's willing to take him on after he's now been implicated in the Puerto doping scandal. He said he wants to race for at least one more season, but he just doesn't believe that any of the top squads will hire him. He went on to say, quote, "I have fully understood that there won't be any place for me in a Pro Tour team." So once again, a sad state of affairs, as Ulrich, as you know, has not tested positive for using doping in this affair. It's just the fact that he's been implicated in the Puerto scandal. And unlike Ivan Basso, he has not been cleared by his sanctioning board. And as a result, he is still really, according to the gentleman's agreement between the teams, he's not allowed to be signed by one of the Pro Tour teams. See what happens. You'll recall that the Pro Tour teams organizations have a meeting coming up next month where I'm sure these issues will be discussed again. Now, another issue that the Pro Tour teams organization will be discussing in its meeting next month is the fate of Discovery Channel Pro Cycling in that organization. You may recall that a couple of shows ago, I told you about how this group, the International Professional Cycling Teams, or IPCT, had met last month and had decided that they were not going to include Discovery Channel in their group any longer as a result of their having signed Ivan Basso, which went in contravention to the gentleman's agreement that said that they would not hire any riders on any of the Pro Tour teams who had been implicated or were under investigation in current doping scandals. Discovery Channel says that's not entirely true. So in the interest of fairness, I'm simply going to read their press release, which reads as follows. "The International Professional Cycling Teams, a business group developed to represent the marketing interests of the UCI Pro Tour teams, but which has no governing authority, met December 8th in Brussels, Belgium. During this meeting, the group discussed Team Discovery Channel's signing of Ivan Basso. Contrary to a report that the Discovery Channel team was voted out as a member of the IPCT for this, expulsion did not take place. The discussion by IPCT cited Basso's signing as a violation of a gentleman's agreement regarding the signing of riders implicated in the Operation Puerto affair. Sports director Johan Brunel was not in attendance but did have representation at the meeting. Brunel stated, quote, "There was no vote on Friday and we have not been expelled from the IPCT. Talk of our removal from the IPCT obviously concerns me on a variety of levels, and we intend to enter into immediate discussions with team representatives about their concerns." End quote. Team Discovery Channel signed Ivan Basso in November after the Italian Cycling Federation dropped all inquiries into his alleged involvement in the Spanish Operación Puerto investigation, as well as being cleared by the Italian Olympic Committee. Additionally, UCI President Pat McQuaid told the AFP, quote, "The Italians have closed the files on Basso, and he has been cleared to race. The Spanish have also closed files on riders who have been involved," unquote. Discovery Channel and Ivan Basso also confirmed last month that under the terms of their contract, the Italian rider had agreed to provide a DNA sample if it is requested. The Discovery Channel team has a license to compete as a member of the UCI Pro Tour through 2008. On an annual basis, all Pro Tour teams are required to register with the UCI and provide a full financial disclosure as a part of the process. Each team is renewed by the UCI upon review of all documents. The Discovery Channel team has submitted all of the necessary documentation required to renew the team in 2007 and has received the proper approval from the UCI. Quote, "Contrary to what has been written, the discussions surrounding the IPCT group have no effect on our Pro Tour license, and we expect to race a full calendar in 2007, unquote, commented General Manager Bill Stapleton. The IPCT has planned to reconvene on January 11th, and Team Discovery Channel will be in attendance. And that ends the press release from Discovery Channel. The point of reading it is this, and I know a lot of you are thinking, what the heck are you reading that for? But let me tell you. You'll recall that I reported that Discovery Channel was barred or excluded from the IPCT as a result of this meeting. And according to all the reports that I've read in the media, there was a specific vote, and the vote was that they would exclude them from the group. I haven't read any reports in the media that said that Discovery Channel was losing its license. I didn't say Discovery Channel was losing their license. I didn't see Velo News or any of the cycling press saying Discovery Channel was losing their license. So I think that this is just an attempt by Discovery Channel to say that, to make sure that the fans understand specifically that they haven't lost their license, that the only thing that they stand to lose is membership in an organization, really a business trade organization, a group of teams who race in the Pro Tour. Now, having said that, like I said, it seems to me, from everything that I've read, that the vote was firm. They had voted to exclude Discovery. But as you also will recall, I told you at the very end of that story that I had read a report that said that they might be revisiting the vote in their next meeting in January. So I think that Discovery probably put some pressure on them, and I think that some of the fans also may have put some pressure on them, and I think there's probably a pretty good possibility that this was really just a slap on the wrist and that come January they will allow Discovery back into the group. But Discovery, I think, here is doing a little bit of damage control and making sure that the fans understand that the blue train will still be out there on the road come 2007. However, I've also read a report that they won't be the blue train in 2007, that Discovery's jerseys this year, instead of being blue, will be black, but they haven't released that on their website officially. So far, I guess that's just a rumor, and it remains to be seen. Now, another story that I've spent a lot of time on in 2006, and almost since the beginning, is this feud that's going on between the UCI and the Pro Tour and the organizers of the three Grand Tours. Of course, the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, and the Vuelta a España, or Tour of Spain. A lot of the feud concerns the calendar, as well as which teams are invited to the races, and who makes those invitations. Well, the Grand Tours have now fired another salvo in their war against the UCI. These three groups have announced their own qualification criteria for their races in 2007. Now, at the end of 2005, the beginning of 2006, you'll recall that this feud was really starting to bubble over, and the Grand Tour organizers were talking about really starting their own qualification criteria, their own calendar, their own championship cup for professional cycling. And now they're thumbing their nose at the UCI and they're saying, you don't tell us who comes to our races. We tell you who will be in our races, because now they're saying that they're going to limit the number of teams invited to the 2007 Grand Tours to a total of 18 teams. And then in 2008, they're going to put a limit on it where there will only be 16 teams invited. Now, you have to consider that these three organizing bodies, the ASO in France, the RCS in Italy, and Unipublique in Spain, have considerable power in the world of professional cycling, because in addition to the three Grand Tours, they also organize Paris-Nice, Tirreno-Adriatico, Milan-San Remo, Paris-Roubaix, Flèche Wallonne, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, Paris Tours, and the Tour of Lombardy. That's 11 of the 27 races on the UCI Pro Tour calendar for 2007. They wield an incredible amount of power. And at a certain point, as this chasm grows wider and wider, unless we somehow find a way to bridge the gulf that separates the Pro Tour from the Grand Tours, there's going to be a split at some point. Then the teams will really have a choice. And if you think about it, which way are they going to go? If the UCI decides to create all their own new races for some reason, and the Pro Tour doesn't include the Tour de France and the Giro d'Italia and the Vuelta a España, what do you think that the teams are going to do? Which way would you go? I think that the professional cyclists know that where the money and the fans will be is with these major races, and that eventually, if push comes to shove, I think the UCI is going to have to buckle, and they're going to have to consider the wants and needs of the Grand Tours, and I think that it's going to be the UCI that's going to bend in the long run. So 2007 really is shaping up to be a very interesting year in professional cycling, and it hasn't even started yet. So with all of this going on in the world of professional cycling and this whole brouhaha surrounding the Pro Tour, would you want a Pro Tour race in your backyard? Well, if you're here in the United States, it may be happening someday soon. Because while there's all these things going on in professional cycling, USA Cycling, according to its own press release of today, quote, has set its sights on and strongly believes that the U.S. will have a UCI Pro Tour race in the very near future. Steve Johnson, the CEO of USA Cycling, said, quote, Pat McQuaid and the UCI have made clear their intention to truly globalize professional cycling and expand the highest level of the sport beyond its traditional Western European borders. This forward-looking vision and direction from the UCI is exactly what is required for professional cycling to reach new markets and grow in stature and popularity worldwide. We're very supportive of the vision for the sport expressed by Mr. McQuaid and believe, and here's the important part, that the U.S. is perfectly positioned and prepared to be a player in the expansion of the Pro Tour outside of its professional structure. Well, it certainly sounds like the Pro Tour may need to expand outside of its present structure. But beyond my opinion on all of that, let's look at the fact that the United States is now getting much better at hosting professional cycling events, and the fan base is certainly growing. Look at the popularity of last year's Tour of California. Look at the popularity of the Ford Tour of Georgia. Both of these events are world-class cycling events with really great courses and very enthusiastic fans by the millions. So I think that it's entirely true that the United States is now poised to consider being once again an international cycling race destination. And while the Pro Tour certainly has its warts and has its problems, I, for one, would love to go to the Tour of California one year and get to see all those same racers that we see in the Grand Tours. That would be something else. And I really do hope that it comes to pass. You know, I was noticing tonight on my way home from work that it was getting really dark much earlier than it had last week and the week before. And of course, that's because at least here in the Northern Hemisphere, we are getting to the shortest day of the year, the winter solstice, which is happening later this week. And for those of us that are cyclists, that means that there's a greater possibility that when we're out there riding, we may need a bike light. And I told you a couple of weeks ago about a city that was giving out bike lights to its cyclists. And here's another great story. This is in Sacramento, California, where the Sacramento Area Bicycle Advocates stood last week at the corner of 21st and K to flag down cyclists who didn't have lights and hand out battery-operated Planet bike lights. Now, they had about 150 lights to give away. They gave away about 80 sets last week, so they're going to have another giveaway this Wednesday evening. So if you're in Sacramento, you may get lucky this Wednesday if you don't have a light, because they've got more lights to give away. This has been a very popular program and one that hopefully will not only save the lives of cyclists in Sacramento, but perhaps also save the cyclists some money, because maybe they won't be getting a ticket for not having headlights. They're hoping that if this program is as popular as it appears to be, that next year they're going to apply for a grant and hope to expand the program there in Sacramento. So kudos to the Sacramento Area Bicycle Advocates for doing what they're doing to help keep cyclists in Northern California safe as the days get shorter and the nights get longer. Now, the next two stories come to us from our friends over at bikebiz.com in the UK. That's our friend Carlton Reed, who's a fellow spokesman on the Spokesman podcast. I'll get to that in a second. Carlton's reporting that Eurobike, well, let's back up a second. You may recall that we talked about the fact that there might be in the future a competitor to the Interbike trade show here in the United States, and that it was going to be Eurobike from Friedrichshafen, Germany, that was looking at possibly putting on a trade show in Portland, Oregon. Well, they've backed off on that at least for 2008, and they're going to be instead putting on a trade show, or actually a consumer show, at the Sea Otter Bicycle Classic in Northern California. But now they're saying that they're going to be doing a demo day at the Friedrichshafen show in Germany this year. And according to the quote that I read in Bike Biz, and this was quite amazing to me, this was going to be, quote, unique for a bicycle trade show. Demo day is something the industry has been waiting for. And that was said by exhibition director Rolf Mona. I spoke with Carlton Reed about this, and or at least by email, and I was really surprised that they would say that this is unique for a bicycle trade show, because this is something that, as you know, Interbike has been doing for a number of years. And I laud them for doing what they're doing. They need to understand that they're not necessarily the first at doing this. Well, you may be familiar with the furniture and Achechepe company IKEA. IKEA has stores all over the world. But IKEA's UK employees were presented with an amazing gift last week at their annual Christmas breakfast event. It seems that all 9,000 of IKEA's employees in the UK, or their so-called co-workers, were presented with a Raleigh-branded folding bike as their corporate Christmas gift. Now, normally, according to BikeBiz.com, Raleigh sources its bikes from Dahan, but these apparently came from Poland. According to IKEA's senior staff, quote, "We want to create a better everyday life for the many and do what we can to make greener living possible. This is both for our coworkers as well as our millions of customers." So this is a really great gift. I'd love to get a gift like that from my employer for Christmas. I don't think that's going to happen. But if you are an IKEA UK employee and you got one of these folding bikes, I'd love to see a picture of it. Please go ahead and email that to thefredcast@gmail.com, and I will post it on the website if I get a picture. No word, by the way, what IKEA's US employees may have gotten for their corporate Christmas gift this year. And that's going to do it for the news for the week of December 18th, 2006. Well, before we get to the features section tonight, just a couple of programming notes. We are getting toward the end of the year. Next week, Monday, which is normally when the show comes out, is Christmas, and then the following Monday is New Year's Day. So here's what we're going to be doing. For the next 2 weeks, we're going to, well, I'm not going to call them reruns, we're going to be doing the best of the Fredcast episodes. Specifically, there have been two episodes that have been extremely popular among the listeners over the last year. I'm going to be cutting those up, just using the main feature section from those and presenting them to you on Christmas and on New Year's, because I'm going out of town and I really will not have the opportunity to present the Fredcast to you. But I will be back. But of course, the Fredcast will return in all its glory on Monday, January 8th, so look for it then. But in the meantime, if you just can't handle the fact that I'm not bringing you enough new cycling podcasting content, and perhaps you haven't listened to my other show, the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast, here's an opportunity for you to fill up your iPod or MP3 player or just your computer with some other cycling podcast goodness. I'd recommend that you go over to the Spokesman's website at www.the-spokesmen.com and check out that podcast. We've put together some great shows, 9 great shows, over the last few months, and if you're not already a subscriber, I highly recommend that you do consider it. But in the meantime, don't forget that Fredcast will be back with regular new content on Monday, January 8th. And by the way, between now and then, I have to admit, I love, love, love getting your emails. Unfortunately, what you all probably have learned if you've emailed me is that sometimes I can be a little bit delayed in my responses to you, and sometimes because of the volume of email, I just don't have a chance to answer all of your great emails and some great comments and suggestions. Please know that I read every single message that you send me. I listen to every single voicemail, and I encourage you to continue sending your voicemails and sending your emails. And over the next 2 weeks while I'm gone, I'm going to do everything in my power to get my inbox cleared out and make sure that I've addressed all of your questions, gone after all of your comments, and that I've cataloged all of your suggestions for the show. So please do continue sending those. If you haven't gotten a response and you asked me a question, expect that sometime within the next few days, you will be getting a response from me. But please continue to send your emails and your voicemails. I really, really do appreciate hearing from you. Speaking of loading up your iPod with content, I've got some content that has to do with iPods, and that is that a few weeks ago, I learned about several products which are supposed to allow you to control your iPod wirelessly. And this really appealed to me because, as you know, when I go out on my training rides, I wear my iPod. But I put my iPod in my jersey pocket. And if I want to raise or lower the volume, or I want to switch songs, the only way to do it is either to take both hands off the handlebar and reach back and sort of fiddle around and find the right button. And a lot of times I make mistakes, or I, you know, if I'm wearing full-fingered gloves because it's cold outside, I can't get it to turn up the volume. It's just a pain in the neck. It's not really an easy thing to do. While some people prefer to put their iPods on their handlebars, I personally don't like to do that because I don't like the idea of the headphone cable dangling in front of me while I ride. Instead, I'd prefer to snake it down my jersey and up back out of the bottom and into the iPod, or just simply down my back and directly into the jersey pocket. So I found these products that will wirelessly allow you to control your iPod, and I was very intrigued. And so I called 3 of the companies that make these products, and I asked if I could try their products and put them head-to-head against each other. So I thought that I would take just a couple of minutes to describe these products to you and let you know the differences between them, and you could choose for yourself which one of these products might be good for you. Now, before I get into the differences between each of these products, I have to tell you, I've used all 3 of them when I'm out riding, and I absolutely loved using all 3 of them. Yes, there are differences between the products, but overall, they do exactly what was advertised. Each of them takes a small adapter, perhaps about the size of a piece of bubble gum, and it inserts into the dock connector on the bottom of your iPod. So if you don't have an iPod with a dock connector, some of these products might not work, but I will tell you that some of these companies offer some adapters that will work with your non-dock connector equipped iPod. So consider that. And I'm putting links to each of these companies in the show notes so you can check it out for yourself. So you put this little gizmo into the bottom of your iPod, and then you put your iPod in your pocket or your backpack or wherever you like. And then each of them has a remote, and they all will mount to your wrist. So they come with a wristwatch style band. You can put it on your wrist. If you're really good, you might be able to figure out a way to put the remote on your handlebars. By the way that I did that is you may be familiar with heart rate monitors that have a wristwatch. And some people don't like to wear a wristwatch when they ride. So I've seen, and I have, a foam donut that split down the side so that you can put it over your handlebars, and then you can mount your wristwatch right onto that, and you can do the same thing with these remotes, by the way, and that's a great way to use the remote if you don't want to have it on your arm. Nevertheless, they each have a remote, and on the remote are duplicate controls to what you would have on your iPod. So there's volume controls, there's fast forward and reverse controls, and there's pause and play controls. Well, the first one that I tried is from a company called Skoche, and that's S-C-O-S-C-H-E. Again, links are in the show notes. Skoche is known for car audio, security, Bluetooth technology, but they came out with a really nice iPod remote. This is their Extreme Sports Style Wireless RF Remote Kit for iPod, the one that I tried. It's their model number IPNRFS, and this works with both the iPod or the iPod Nano. Suggested retail price on this unit is about $79.95. The next one that I tried is from Monster Cable. Again, Monster Cable, very, very well known for their cables and connectors for connecting your home stereo and car audio equipment. This is their Monster iEasyClick remote control for iPod. Again, it has a small chewing gum sized RF receiver that goes into the bottom of your dock connector equipped iPod, as well as the wristwatch style remote that includes all of the buttons that duplicate what's on your iPod. Now, what's one of the things that's unique about the Monster version is the fact that in addition to the Velcro style wristband, they also have a belt clip that you can use on their remote. And the Monster iEasyClick retails for $69.95. Finally, the third version that I tested is from Belkin. Belkin, very well known for their computer accessories, is the Belkin Sport Command for iPod. Once again, this one retails for about $79.95. This one's a little bit different in the way that it looks. It is certainly the largest remote of the ones that I tested. And besides that, the RF receiver that goes into the iPod is quite a bit larger than any of the others. I'll put photos of all of this on the website so that you can see what I'm talking about. Because this one has a connector that goes into the bottom of the iPod. The connector alone is similar in size to the entire RF receiver from the Monster and the Skoche. But then from the connector comes a cable of about maybe an inch or two long, and then another piece that is the actual RF receiver. So this is quite a bit larger on the receiver side. And then again, on the remote, it's also larger. And I have some theories exactly about why this is. The Belkin, again, retails for $79.99. So let's talk about the differences or the similarities between all three of these units. Number one, I took all of them on rides, and they all performed perfectly for that purpose. No problem changing volume, changing tracks, pausing, starting again. They all worked very, very well for riding your bike or for sitting on your trainer and using them that way. I had no problems with any of the units using it that way. So then I had a thought. You know, I have the 5.5 generation iPod with video, And one of the things that I do is I'll put videos or buy TV shows from the iTunes Music Store, and then I'll connect that to my television so I can watch it on TV. And so I had this thought, well, since my TV is across the room, what if I wanted to control my videos using one of these remotes? And they all worked really well for that. Then I had another thought. How far will they work? And so I did a little unscientific test. I gave my daughter my iPod and I had her walk farther and farther away with each of these RF units attached. And then I stood in the same place and I tried each of the various remotes. And what I found was, at least in my testing, that the Belkin had the shortest range. Certainly the range was absolutely fantastic for using it for sports, having it in a backpack or having it in your pocket. It was even good for using it for a television. It definitely worked across a room. But when the distances got a little bit more extended, the Belkin's reception range dropped. Second was the Monster. The Monster's range was quite extended. It seemed to me to be about 50, 60 feet. I was able to get good reception. But the Skoch seemed to definitely win the day. It seemed like it had the best reception of all three of them. But having said that, how often are you going to use a product like this at 50 feet away? Quite frankly, I really doubt that you ever will. But it's nice to know which one has the better power. Now, as far as the remotes are concerned, they are all different sizes, so I thought I'd compare each of them for you and compare the different attributes of each so that you'd have a good idea, because really, that's the portion that you're going to be interfacing with. That's the portion that you're going to have on your arm or on your handlebars. It's the portion that you're going to see, and so I thought that I'd just compare all three of them for you so that you had a good idea exactly what the differences were. So, just to give you an idea of the sizes, starting with the largest and going to the smallest, the Belkin is definitely the largest at 4 inches by about 2 3/4, by about, at its thickest, about 3/8 thick. So it's definitely the thinnest of all of them, but overall, its overall dimensions are much larger. The Monster, about 2 inches by 2 1/2 by 3/4 thick. And then the Skoch is about 2 inches by about 1 5/8 by about 1/2 inch thick. I have a theory, though, about why the Belkin is this large, and I think that this is a benefit for some, and that this is where some of the others might falter. If you are using the Belkin for skiing or snowboarding or some other winter sport, or perhaps you live somewhere where not only do you wear full finger gloves to ride your bike, but you have to wear insulated gloves, I think the Belkin would probably be your best bet, because it will allow you, in my opinion, better usability with gloved fingers. With gloved fingers, I think next in line would probably be the Monster, because its buttons are a bit larger. And then finally, I think I would probably have a difficult time using the Skoch with really heavily gloved fingers. Now, having said that, if I'm not wearing gloves, if I'm not using this for winter sports, I think that I would probably tend more toward either the Monster or the Skoch because of their smaller form factor, and they're just a little less, just a little less goofy looking when I wear them. The benefit of the Monster, however, is the fact that just like your iPod has a lock button so that you can slide it so you don't inadvertently hit one of the keys by mistake and then skip a song or change your volume, well, the Monster remote also has a lock button. Neither the Skoch nor the Belkin have lock buttons. And so if you think that you might inadvertently hit a button, then I think that that might be an advantage for you. Having said that, however, I think that one of the reasons why the Monster may have a lock button and the others don't is because the Monster's buttons are raised above the level of the wristwatch style unit. And so I think that you're more likely to possibly hit one of those buttons where you wouldn't be with one of the others. Overall, I couldn't tell you yet about battery life between any of the three units. I will tell you, however, that the Belkin was the only one where I had to install the battery when I opened the package. a minor issue, but something that you should probably know about. Another cool thing about the Belkin was the fact that it came with a little carabiner loop so that you could loop it into its remote and then hook it onto a backpack or onto a belt loop or something like that. Something also on the downside with the Belkin, other than the large size of the RF receiver, something that I didn't like about the Belkin as opposed to the other two, you know, normally if you hit the buttons on a remote control, when you press the button, you can feel there's a tactile button press feel, or a click, if you will, when you press a button. You don't get that feedback from the Belkin. The only feedback that you get is a green light that turns on to tell you that you hit the button. Quite frankly, when I'm skiing or on my bike, I'm not going to be looking for that button press. Instead, I'm going to be feeling for that tactile feeling of having pushed a button. Overall, all three of them performed very well, so I think in the end, it probably comes down to a choice of how you're going to use the unit. So I'm going to put some pictures onto the website in the next day or so that you can see the differences between the units, including the sizes of their RF receivers. I'm not a professional photographer, so keep that in mind. Nevertheless, I think that this all comes down to personal preference for you. For me, I think that I would probably be more likely to purchase either the Skosh or the Monster over the Belkin, because I'm going to use it for cycling. It's not something I'm going to use for skiing or other winter sports. But since I know that a lot of Fredcast listeners are multi-sport athletes, if you are a winter sport user, I think that the Belkin might be a good choice for you. So there you have it. Three really good iPod remotes, and something that if it's something that you're interested in, until Apple comes out with a wireless remote control, these might be a really good solution for you for using your iPod when you're out in the outdoors. Enjoy. Speaking of winter sports, listener Timothy sent me a link for a website that I'd never heard of, and I probably walked right by this booth at Interbike, and I never really gave it a second thought. But this is for a product called K-Track, and of course, I'm going to put links in the show notes to this, but listener Timothy sent this to me because he just thought it was a really cool product. So what is it? This is a product that will convert your mountain bike into a snow bike. You remove the rear wheel, you remove the front wheel, a ski goes on the front fork, and on the rear wheel goes this cool monotrack system that allows you to propel your bike through the snow. It is a really neat looking system. It looks like it would be a lot of fun to play with. According to the website, the adult rear wheel drive kit is going to be about $400 retail, and the kids would be about $200 retail. And the front ski kit is about $140 for the adults and about $90 for the kids. I encourage you to go on their website and check it out. They have a great video of people using it, and they have a great sense of humor. For instance, on their FAQs, it says, does it matter if you're male or female? It says, no, but we prefer females. Does age matter? No, age doesn't matter, just beauty. You must be beautiful to ride a K-Track. And then finally, down at the bottom, it says, does it work? And it says, that's a stupid question. Why'd you even look at this one? Of course it works. It works awesome. Listen, this is a really cool looking product. I would recommend that if you do use it, that you wear a helmet and appropriate safety gear. It looks like a lot of fun. If you get one, let me know. I'd love to know how it works. And I want to thank listener Timothy for sending the links to me, because this just looks like a blast to play with. Okay, next up, something we haven't done here on the Fredcast in a while, but I want to get back to it. That's upcoming rides and events. And perhaps one of the reasons I haven't done it in a while is because, well, it's wintertime and there's not a whole lot of events going on. But the season's going to be starting soon enough, and so let's get right back to it. January 7th, 2007 is the Casa Grande Century. This is taking place in Chandler, Arizona. This has 100, 62, and 34 mile options, and it's sponsored by the Phoenix Metro Bicycle Club. And I love what it says on their website. It says, question, why do Arizona cyclists ride centuries in January? And the answer is, because they can. They tout this one as a great first century or metric century. They say the terrain is flat, the roads have low traffic, and according to them, if history repeats itself, the weather is sunny with a high of 70. What more could you want? I put a link in the show notes to it. Sounds like a lot of fun. I've been to Casa Grande before, and it's a nice place to go. And this time of year, it's warm. So keep that in mind. Next up is the Stagecoach Century, taking place January 13th, 2007. Again, links are in the show notes. I have done this one. I mentioned it last year as an upcoming event, and I did it last year. It was one of my favorite events that I did last year. It's a 50-mile out and 50-mile back course on roads that are extremely lightly traveled. And what's great about the road is that the entire distance you will encounter one, count them, one stop sign. So it makes for a really great ride. Now, last year we had howling headwinds for the first 50 miles. Matter of fact, after the first 2 miles, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to go the full 100. Nevertheless, I made it out to the 50-mile turnaround, had my chilly lunch, and then started back with a great tailwind. And then about halfway back, the wind shifted and I had a crosswind, sometimes a headwind, once again. Don't let that dissuade you. It was beautiful terrain. It was a really great ride. Slightly challenging, of course, because of the headwind, but the scenery was wonderful and it was very well organized and something that I think you should consider. Next up, January 19th through the 21st is the UCI Track Cycling World Cup Classic at the Home Depot Center in Carson, California. So that's right here in Southern California. I've never been to a track event before, but my fellow spokesman, Tim Jackson from Mozzie Bikes and Carlton Reed from BikeBiz.com are urging me to go, telling me that track racing is addictive, it gets your adrenaline pumping, and that it's just a really exciting event. It's a 3-day event. Again, taking place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, January 19th through the 21st. I put a link in the show notes, and you can buy your tickets from Ticketmaster.com. Finally, we've talked quite a bit here on the show, actually, about the Amgen Tour of California taking place very, very soon, February 2007. Well, the city of Long Beach, California is going to have a festival that will be associated with their hosting of the final day of the event. And this is going to be the Long Beach Bike and Family Festival on Saturday, February the 24th from 11 to 3 p.m., as well as the following day, Sunday, February 25th. I put a link in the show notes to that where you can find all sorts of information. Sounds like it's going to be a great event for the entire family. So if you're in Southern California or if you're coming for the Amgen Tour of California, be sure to check out Long Beach's festival. A couple of items from the email and the voicemail tonight. The first comes to us from our old friend Kristen from the Manic Mommies podcast at www.manicmommies.com. Kristen left me the following message a couple of days ago, and I messed up when I extracted it from my cell phone. So if you'll forgive me for the echo and the strange way it sounds, that's all my fault, but the content is there. So listen carefully as Kristen gives us her opinion on something we talked about on a recent Fredcast. Kristen?
Hi, this is Kristen from the Manic Mommies, and I'm an echo. I don't know about that one. I'm going to have to think that one over. I am catching up on some older shows of yours. I wanted to thank you for the gift guide. Very important for anyone who's married to a Fred. And also to comment on the news item you had about women's sensitivity, because I have often complained to my husband that that I thought that it could, you know, cause some loss of sensation from riding my bicycle a lot. And you would say like, oh, I know it hurts now, honey, but it'll go away. You'll get used to it, right? And I clearly remember telling him, I don't know that you want me getting used to that. I don't know that you want me losing sensitivity down there. So I do have a recommendation. Obviously, a good pair of shorts are very helpful. You can also not shorts, but briefs at REI that you can use under any pair of shorts. But I also use the, I believe it's a Terry bicycle saddle, and it has a strategically placed hole that definitely makes things a little more comfortable for any woman rider. Obviously, I'm not a competitive rider, so I don't really know how that all works out, but I love my saddle, and I make my husband move it from bike to bike, regardless of what I'm riding.
Hey, thanks, Kristen, for weighing in on what is admittedly a sensitive subject, and I appreciated your call. And I also appreciate your show. If you are a working mom or married to a working mom, I highly recommend Kristen and Aaron's show at www.manicmommies.com. Next up, I got a great voicemail from Kevin in Chicago, and I thought that I would play this one for you. So here is Kevin and his voicemail with some comments about the show. Kevin?
Hey, David. This is Kevin from the Chicago area here in Illinois. Just wanted to call and use my own voice instead of an email to tell you congratulations on 1 year of the Fredcast. I know I've gotten a lot of enjoyment from it, and I've turned other people onto it also, and it's been a lot of fun, very informative. Unfortunately, I didn't hear your live broadcast, but I just listened to it. And really enjoyed Graham and Josh, but seeing as I'm really into yoga and core strength, that I found very, very exciting and something I hope to look into further. Also, I wanted to congratulate you on your award for the MS-150. Hopefully somewhere down the road on my wish list, I'd love to come out to the West Coast and bring my bike and maybe ride in that MS-150, as it sounds like it would be a lot of fun. But all the best to you and your family, and again, congratulations, and thanks for all that you do. Bye-bye.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for the voicemail. I really appreciate it, and thanks also for the congratulations. Finally, I want to send a shout-out to listener Noreen. We've talked about Noreen here on the show before. She is from Team Rubicon up there in the Great Northwest, and she let me know about a YouTube video from a group called the Fearless Hyenas, and the video is called Bikin' Dirty. Now, a couple of warnings. First of all, it is a parody on a rap song from a band called Chamillionaire. Their song is Ridin'. This one, again, is Bikin' Dirty, and it's all about Floyd's trials and tribulations with the French after he won this year's Tour de France. Now, warning, parents, don't let your kids listen to this one. The lyrics can get quite explicit. However, if you are an adult and some occasional bad language doesn't frighten you off, this one's kind of cute what they did. So thanks, Noreen, for sending that. And of course, there are links in the show notes. Okay, well, that is going to do it for tonight's show. But before we get to tonight's PodSafe Cycling Music, I do it all the time. It's important to me. I want to hear from you, and I also want your support. So first of all, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for staying subscribed. I really, really appreciate it, and of course, I appreciate you spreading the word. So this week, tell 3 cycling friends about the Fredcast, tell them about the spokesman, and hopefully we'll gain more listeners that way. Of course, if you can't do that, please go to Podcast Alley and vote for us there. Being high up in the rankings does help us. It helps us get more listeners and helps us get more support for the show. We appreciate that. And if you can't do that, the next time you're in iTunes, head over to the Fredcast over on the podcast section and write a nice review about us. I would appreciate that. Finally, of course, please continue to contact the show. Love, 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 I said that before, getting your emails. Please send your emails to thefredcast@gmail.com. You can send a text email, or you can always send an audio comment in your emails. If you're not technologically savvy enough to do that, you can always call our voicemail line, just like Kevin and Kristen did, and I promise to get a little bit better about extracting the audio, at area code 206-203-FRED, or you can put your audio comments right on the web by clicking the button on the left-hand side of the page where it says audio comments. Of course, go ahead and check out the Fredcast forums. They do a great job there of some great conversations that go on, and Rick, you do a great job moderating those forums, and I really appreciate your help there. Finally, visit the website whenever you can at www.thefredcast.com. You can find show notes and all the links to everything we talk about on the show, as well as the Fredcast forums and archived shows, as well as occasionally a little bit of news or information will pop up there. Finally tonight, as we get ready to go on our holiday hiatus, our PodSafe Cycling music. Tonight, this is holiday PodSafe Cycling music by, I'm going to call him the Fredcast House Band. This is by our old friend Jimmy Bratcher. Jimmy does the opening music to the Fredcast every week. This is a holiday tune from Jimmy. This is called Going to Grammy's House, and I'm playing it because that's exactly what we're doing. Come Friday, we'll be driving literally over the river and through the woods to get to Grandmother's house way on up there in Idaho. So hopefully the weather will hold and we won't have too much snow as we drive up there. Going to Grammy's House is coming to us from, again, Jimmy Bratcher and the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. I have a link to the PodSafe Music Network in the show notes, as well as a link to Jimmy's website, Jimmy's Pod Show site, and where you can find Jimmy on iTunes. So, to close out 2006 and our first show of our second year of the Fredcast, I want to wish all of you a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a Happy Kwanzaa, a Happy New Year. No matter what holiday you celebrate, I hope that it's a good one for you and that this holiday season brings you good cheer, good health, good cycling, and that you enjoy the coming year, that you enjoy this music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.